Welcome to the Web3 Artist Spotlight, the podcast that shines a spotlight on talented artists who are leveraging Web3 technology to sell their art and connect with collectors in new and innovative ways. Through in-depth interviews, we learn more about the artists behind the art and uncover their unique creative processes, inspirations, passions, and the stories behind their captivating artworks. From seasoned professionals to emerging talents, we bring you a diverse range of voices from the Web3 community, and we delve deeper into how blockchain technology, NFTs, and decentralized platforms are revolutionizing the art industry.
Black creates captivating surrealism and post-photography art. He is a community builder, pushing tech and art to the forefront. He is widely connected and collected and considered a pioneer within the AI art space. We are honored to have him here today. With that, Giancarlo and I welcome him to the space.
Thank you so much for having me. That was such a really just perfect introduction. So nice and made me smile. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Love it. All right, man. So first thing I wanted to ask you about was, you know, I did read that you are a serial entrepreneur, that you founded, well, at least as of the time of what I read, I had founded 5 businesses and companies, and that you had started that at 19 years old. But despite all this other, you know, accomplishments from a business world, that you've always been an artist at heart, right, or at the core. And I was curious, like, when did you first discover your love for art? And maybe what were some of the early influences that that you had from an artistic perspective? And if you could share more about that with us.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been an artist forever before I've done anything else. I was, I had started doing art when I was a kid, and then heavily in high school. I went to Savannah College of Art and Design for college. And so art has always been like core part of who I am and what I do. So it's definitely been something that's been a driving factor for me for a long time. I think early influences, when I started looking into work from like Kandinsky, especially Dali and others, more in the like abstract expressionist realm, Joan Mitchell and others like that, that really inspired me. I've been a abstract expressionist oil painter for a long time, as well as a photographer. And I've been in and out of creative teams and ran a couple agencies and stuff like that. So art and creation, creativity in one way or the other, has been at the root of everything that I've done. So even with the other businesses and things that I've ran and been a part of, for the most part, in some way, shape or form, you know, creation has been at the core of that, whether that's been from like a literal standpoint of being a photography director or a creative director, all the way to, you know, branding or doing like consulting on marketing or things like that. Like all of it has been from the direction of creativity and that sort of thing. And, you know, this venture doing this now is something that has really kind of, it's been something that I've always wanted to do, is just do art. That's what I've always really wanted to do. And I went to college for the purpose of doing art, and I ended up going into, you know, advertising and marketing and design and things like that, because I didn't want to be like a poor artist. You know, I'd been like an entrepreneur streak anyways, and I wanted to make money and grow business and stuff like this. And so that's what I wanted to do and kind of merge the two. And, you know, years later, to be honest, everything that I've done in my history is sort of all accumulating to this. You know, what I'm doing here in this space and what I've been able to accomplish and kind of, you know, empower others to do and that sort of thing has been from the perspective of being successful, growing, working, you know, grinding it out and making it work. And so I think a lot of this stuff like has just kind of stacked up to be all these experiences that have helped benefit me to accomplish the things that I do accomplish. I kind of, you know, I have multiple things going on at one time all the time. And that comes from compartmentalization mentally, from running different teams and doing different things over time. And it's just like, I think a lot of the things that I've done have added up to me being here, not necessarily this being a complete, you know, sidestep or new thing. It's almost like I needed all of that in order to be here to do this. That's sort of how I feel about it. At least maybe that's a coping mechanism. I don't know, but at least that's how I feel.
Yeah, but no, that's awesome, man. And I freaking love that. And I love the fact that like, so you went, you studied art and then you actually, you know, use that creativity in all these like business ventures and the work and that all those like experiences have come together to help you kind of get to where you are, right? And building like the different skill sets and things like that. So that's so cool. And by the way, like just out of curiosity, do you still do like any of the traditional like stuff with like oil and acrylic on canvas, or are you mostly just doing like digital stuff nowadays? I'm just curious.
Nowadays it's mostly digital, but I actually implement that stuff in my work. For example, the series that I have out that's still open now called Penumbra, that one is a lot of the work in that actually derived from like close up texture photography of oil paintings and things that I've done. And I've used that in like a blending process. And so it's interesting because a lot of the kind of textural elements that are in the final product are actually like blended derivatives of like oil paintings and things that I have that I've created. And so that's kind of interesting to kind of use these things that I've done, you know, over the years and just to kind of pull out textures and things and put them into digital work. And even though that's not really like a part of the like philosophy behind it, is definitely part of the process behind creation. But I sketch often. I do a lot of layout sketches and studies and things like that for like larger pieces. So I do kind of work in that realm. Something that I had been considering though, if I didn't come to Miami, which was sort of like a last minute decision, I was going to, and maybe I'll do this in January, but in December, I was originally thinking about maybe doing like a 5-day live stream, like a few hours a day for like 5 or 6 days, and like doing like a live abstract expressionist painting. Something I've shared over time a few of those paintings, and I've always done them just for personal use, or I've given them away to like family and friends for gifts or things like this. I usually work in like a pretty large format, and I've never sold them. It's not something I've ever done like that. And so, but I've considered like maybe doing like a live stream of, you know, an abstract expressionist type of painting, because I've been really wanting to do that, but then put it into this world too, you know, mint it, professionally shoot it, mint it, and then have the actual physical be something that's up for auction, like during the course of the live stream or something like that. So I've considered kind of, you know, branching into that a little bit, but it's definitely not at the core of what it is I'm doing here, or, you know, it doesn't really touch into a lot of the philosophies and the more like spiritual purpose side of the things that I'm doing, but it's still something that's definitely still a part of, you know, me, like spiritually and soulfully from like a creative standpoint.
Yeah. Wow. I freaking love that. I would love to see that too, by the way. So I think it's an awesome idea, like to do that live stream and then mint the artwork and auction off the physical. Man, that sounds awesome.
Just to add on one more thing, being here and going to a lot of the fairs and stuff the last couple of days, like just walking around and seeing a lot of the abstract expressionism like paintings and things, like it's the type of work you need to have physical. It's the type of work you need to see in person to like fully absorb. And it's been really inspiring. Just walking, I'm like, damn, like I gotta get back in the lab. Like I gotta get some paint on my hands. Like it makes me, it really inspires me, because there's something so visceral about that. As much as I love everything that I'm doing here and I'm super into it, but there's something just so visceral about, you know, gesturing and painting and getting that emotion out there. And there's so much like friction and hesitation, like you're overcoming like reluctancies while you're painting. And like, there's this whole kind of journey that's involved with it. And I really do miss that. And I kind of want to like face that one again.
Oh man, love that. Totally. So one thing I want to segue into is I did read that, you know, you had first come across the text to image AI generative art in like late 2021. And what I found interesting was that you actually had hired a developer to like create your own proprietary AI back then. And I was just kind of curious, like why you decided to go that route instead of like diving right into like existing tools. And I was curious if you're still using anything from that like proprietary AI at all, or if you just kind of abandoned it and are just using things like Midjourney and other tools at this point.
Yeah. So at the time, the story behind that is I had connected with the founder of Wombo. If anyone's familiar with Wombo, that was like one of the OG like AI creator tools. I connected with him over LinkedIn, and we had a couple of conversations back and forth, and I found out about Dream. And so I went and just like checked it out, and I downloaded it on my phone. And like within a week or two, I was like, okay, I just wanted my own. Two, I wasn't sure like what the commercialization aspect was going to be. I was like, I didn't really want to be beholden to other companies or platforms, because at that time, like, there was a completely different landscape than it is right now. So at that time, it was like, I looked at it as like a startup. I looked at it as like, this is tech that could be created on your own if you just have the tools to do it, and you may not be able to do that later. That's sort of how I looked at it, because I looked at it as like a massive, massive catalyst. Like when I saw that and I saw what it was doing, I saw that it was limited at the time, but I was like, holy shit, this is going to be a game changer. Like, this is going to change everything. And so that's why I pulled on a dev and we built it out. And it was based off of, we took like existing models and also logic, but we basically built out our own version of like a hybrid between VQGAN and VDIF. We also built out our own custom upscalers as well as animation tools and all packaged it into one thing. And all of it's like basically raw code sitting on a Google Colab. And so I ended up producing a ton of work with that ever before I even opened up a Twitter account. I probably was running creations for probably 5 months or so before I even opened up Twitter, and before I even got into like Web3, I was creating AI work on my own in a silo the entire time. And so with that, it is sort of shelved. I don't use it, but I do want to potentially, Delta and I were talking about this last night, ironically enough, but I was thinking about maybe releasing them over time. Is I have 1,000 finished works that I was actually going to drop with a partner company at some point, but that was right when the bull crashed, like in May of 22. And long story short, that didn't come to fruition because they had some issues and blah, blah, blah. But basically the point is I still have like 1,000 finished pieces, and I would describe them much more like expressionist in nature, which is ironic because I find that while working with these tools now, as advanced as they have come, like one of the things I really like to do is break them and kind of, you know, make them do things they don't want to do. And so what's interesting is like the end result ends up being actually very, very similar in nature to a lot of the stuff that I was creating then. So it's interesting to kind of see it kind of come full circle and want to go back. At that time, you know, everyone was chasing, and myself was chasing like the perfection and wanted it to be better and better and better and more objective and more clean and more perfect. And now you're at a point where that's achievable. And so now I want to go back. So it's interesting. And I think maybe I have used those as like initial images and blending elements and things like this over time too. So they're also kind of mixed into a lot of the work that I have out there too, in one way, shape or form, and, you know, kind of in a lineage type of way. I'm not using it directly, but I do still have it.
Man, that's crazy. And so many pieces that you have created that you could potentially release. That's so awesome.
You know, maybe at some point in like 5 years when I'm so minted out and everything else, I'm like, yeah, here's these 1,000 pieces that no one's ever seen before. I mean, I don't know.
Here you
go. It could be fun,
you know? Like,
what? Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. So your artwork, man, I mean, it is just like so incredible. Like the style, I mean, and it's you know, it's kind of like surrealist. It's a bit dark, sometimes kind of sci-fi-esque, even sometimes like apocalyptic in its essence. I was curious, like, if you could share a little bit more about like, where does the inspiration for your artworks come from?
That's a huge question. I think a lot of it, you know, I tend to touch on this like spectrum of things. Like I think that everyone is both dark and light. You know, I think everyone is on this spectrum of dark and light. And I think that a lot of it is that for me, is exploring that spectrum from one side to the other. You know, I have a lot of work that's, you know, kind of driven by the ideas of enlightenment or psychedelia or transcendentalism or astral projection or these things that are kind of on the bright side, you know. And then I also have work that's on the dark side that's more like occultic or alchemist or something that is more like ritualistic. And like, I think, I believe that all of those things are the same thing. They're just on different points of the same spectrum. And so a lot of it comes from that. And so, you know, a lot of the more transcendentalism type of work that I've produced is really based on experiences that I've had in life and, you know, more kind of explorations of ultra consciousness that I've done on my own, and breaking through the veil and out of body experiences, astral projection and psychedelics and different things like this over time that have really kind of broken apart how I view reality. And so I tend to not, the short version is I don't think any of this is real. I don't think what we're experiencing is real. I think, not that it's fake, but it's not the full picture. And I know from my own experiences that it's not, like, I know that to my core, but it's always been really difficult to express that and to articulate things that I've seen or experienced. And at the end of the day, I think anyone else on the, on the outside looking in can kind of look at that and be like, well, you know, I think that you believe that, you know, I had a friend of mine told me once a long time ago, I believe that you believe it, you know, and that's something that really resonated with me in terms of like how people probably feel about, you know, hearing it. You know, if you ever talk to someone who had like a crazy dream or, you know, they tripped on DMT or they're telling you this whole experience and the whole time you're like, man, that sounds crazy, dude. Like, I don't know what you saw, but you know, I'm not, you know, I didn't see it. So I'd have to see it to believe it. That's sort of how it is. And so to me, a lot of the work that I put out there is really something for you to see, to believe me. That's sort of how I look at it. Like I want to put something out there. And while it may not be, and mostly is not, a literal translation of those things, it is an idea of those things. It's something that is an expression of the inexpressible. That's sort of how I look at it. I think it's really difficult to express some of the things that I've experienced. I know other people have too, especially, and not just like psychedelics, but like ancient practices, like, you know, transcendentalism and Vedic practices and these things that, you know, I've done completely sober and broken out of my body and walked around a room. I mean, I've done these things and it sounds crazy, wow. But I think that when I put it into my art, it's something that's a little bit more tangible. And I think when people look at it, even if they don't know what they're looking at or really where it comes from, that's fine. As long as it makes them think, you know, it breaks something, it breaks a habit, it breaks an expectation, or at least makes them question something about the reality in which we're in, or they just think it looks cool. And any of the above is fine with me, but that's sort of where I'm coming from. Yeah.
No, that's awesome. I was also kind of curious, like how close you feel like your art achieves like the expressing that unexpressible or those visions and those experiences, like, you know, do you really feel like it is capturing the essence, or it's still kind of far away from what you would, you know, I guess what you experienced, what you've seen, what you felt?
I think from a philosophical standpoint, it hits that. I think from a literal standpoint, not as much. There's some things that I was doing, you know, a lot of stuff I just kind of post as like GMGN, sort of as like fodder for Twitter. And there's just like what I look at as like studies, you know, and, you know, some things like photorealistic, like translucent skin, seeing like internal organs and veins and things like this, like those are very, very accurate from things that I've experienced, especially from like Zen practices and stuff. Like I've experienced those things. And so those are kind of literal. Then the other ones are much more, I would say, figurative in nature. And I like building narratives around stuff and kind of building out a philosophy that you can kind of follow along with, rather than trying to put something down that's like as accurate as possible. Because I mean, at this point too, a lot of it, it's sort of like, I think a lot of it's almost like dreams, you know, like where you have a dream and then the next day, you know, you tell someone about your dream, and then it's a little bit like you're kind of filling in the blanks when you do it, because you don't remember it exactly. Like you just have like the idea of what it was, because it's not something you can really hold on to, you know, every single step along the way. And, you know, I think a lot of it's sort of like that, especially as years go by, you remember the feeling that you had from an experience. You remember a couple points of visuals that you had, or a couple things that stood out, and the rest of it, you're kind of like, man, I'm pretty sure that I kind of got to this point because of this thing. And like, it's sort of like that, you know? And so I think trying to fill in the blanks a little bit and making it a little bit more of a path to follow, rather than being dictated about what happened. It's not supposed to be like an historical account. It's much more of like the idea about what we all can achieve and are actually doing all the time. We're just not really realizing this.
Love that. Do you have a particularly meaningful piece that you have created? And if so, which one would you say that is?
I would probably point towards Penumbra. Is probably, it's a series that I have. I have five pieces minting. There will be 11 total eventually. I'm working on number six. That series is probably the one that means the most to me right now. It's definitely been, this year in 2023, it's definitely been the thing that has pushed a lot of the work that I've done and branched out into other things. It's allowed me to kind of work on a framework for a belief system. It's created, you know, the ideas around a lot of other series that I've had. And so that's definitely, Penumbra has been something that it's been a spark for me in a lot of ways. And it's something that I'm working on sort of all the time in the background. And it's just, that one is definitely, it's not one single piece, you know, it's a little bit different answer to your question, but it's definitely something that has spanned that. And I would say the very first one, to be specific, is probably the one that launched all that. And that's Penumbra 3. That one is the one that I did that really, it validated the idea, it validated the narrative structure of things that I'm doing, and it kind of allowed me to begin to branch into all these different ideas that I've been working on.
That's awesome. I was looking forward to pin up to the top, so I'm going to do that. And while I do that, I did have another question for you, which is, if you could predict the future, where do you see AI art as far as like art history goes?
I think we're living it right now. I think right now, this is, you know, we're in art history in real time at the moment. And I think that the tooling is just going to be another, you know, arrow in the quiver. It already is for a lot of us. It's something that is, hardly anything that I put out is just straight from, you know, AI. It's much more about utilizing the tool to hit on different levels of expression and create different ideas, and then using other tools and Photoshop and upscaling and all kinds of things in order to create the thing you intend to create. I think it's really about intention and achieving the thing you're intending to achieve. I think that's really what it is about more than anything else. And it doesn't really matter what the tool is that you're using to get to that point. I think process is important. And owning your own process is important. And, you know, having something that is you kind of derive into like a master craft, I think is really important for artists, especially those that are like elevating what it is that they're doing. And, you know, trying to have that, like really, really breaking down the process and getting things, you know, in a place where like you're doing something that others may not be doing, and you're able to really own that every step of the way. I see that as a thing that becomes, what essentially I would say maybe legacy. I think the process is what dictates legacy in art history. Typically, you look at like a lot of the more like traditionalists, like huge master painters and things like this. Like they had a very, very specific honed in mastercraft process, and so the tools are remembered less over time than the outcome of that process, and so. That's how I would like to see it, at least. I wouldn't say that's a prediction, but I would like to see that be the case. I would like to be known for the outcome of the process rather than the tools that were used in the process, because I think that's much more important, even though from an artist creation standpoint, I believe that, you know, working on it and you kind of honing on your own thing is really important, but the outcome is really the thing. The reason why, I think, is also going to be more important than the how. We've worked a lot with the how in the last year or two with, you know, new tools and all these things coming out. But I think as you become more and more elevated in your craft and it's something you're really pushing, I think the why becomes much more important. And that's something that you have to have reasons and purpose behind the work, regardless of how you're making it. The how is important to achieve it, but the why is important to experience it and to absorb it. I think that's maybe the thing that hopefully will begin to stand out more so than the tools used to get there.
No, I think that's such a good point too, for sure. And, you know, it just being more about like, you know, the outcome and, you know, this kind of like, it made me think a little bit about, you know, just, you know, art in general, right? That like, sometimes people talk about, you know, like, oh, it's, you know, you hear these things like, is AI art really art and all this stuff. And it's at the end of the day, it's like, it is, right? No matter what medium, you know, or what tools you're using, this is all part of a form of creative expression, right? And it's, you know, and also it's almost like, I think we, you know, we should even get away from these labels of like AI artist or digital artist. You know, you're just an artist, you're a creator, you're somebody that's making stuff, right? So, you know, I do see, yeah, like it transcending over to like, yeah, this is just, you know, an era where we're getting, you know, a lot more creative output, right? And creativity and art and these are just new tools and things that are allowing us to express it in, you know, in more ways, better ways, different ways than we've done in the past, you know? So no, that's awesome. And Black, you, one thing I wanted to ask you, you recently had released, you know, this awesome collab collection, the Matic Nauvoo with Delta, with DVK artist, you know, that was one of the, I also, you know, we talked a little bit about with on Delta Space when he was here, and I was curious if there were any other artists in the space that you would love to collaborate with, that you may, or maybe you're even considering collaborating with in the future.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I feel like most of what I've done here in the last 6 months is collaborate. I feel like in a way, there's so many really interesting projects that are out there, and like group drops and things like this. I look at that as like a form of collaboration. The Nomadic Nouveau was more intimate form of collaboration where we were all like very, very closely working together to achieve something. But I think, like, for example, I actually just made a drop this morning for a show that's here in Miami. That's actually an AR experience on Muscle Beach called Vibism. And that's like a collaborative type of curated event as well. And recently we had a Horrorwood, which is like a post photography collaboration with Strange History. And there's, to be honest, I feel like I'm actually collaborating with everyone all the time. And I think in a way, I almost need to tone it down a little bit because I have all these huge projects that I'm trying to do, with my own world of things as well. But I won't say there's like a specific artist in mind that I want to collaborate with because I am open to conversations about that. But the way that I look at it is what the purpose is. I think going into 2024, I'm going to be a little bit tighter on how I collaborate and doing group things because I just have a lot of things to focus on. And so to me, it's going to be much more about what the purpose is, if it's disruptive, if it's philosophical, if it's something like that, rather than something that is more, I guess, like sales driven or things of that nature. Like, to me, the purpose of it matters more than anything else at this point. I think a lot of stuff, I say yes to things that I think are fun, things that I think I'm going to enjoy, or things that I think are going to be impactful. Like, that's sort of how I look at it. And there's been a lot of that. So I feel like I've been involved in a lot of things because that's sort of how I've looked at it. But I think in the future, like moving ahead, I want to be a catalyst for chaos, or a catalyst for kind of, as I like to say, maybe cosmic anarchy or something, where we're breaking the expectations that people have on the way that we look at the world, the way that we look at life, the way we look at spirituality, the way we look at philosophy. Like, those are the things that I want to break barriers on. And so when it comes to collaborating with people, like, that's the kind of thing I want to do. Like, I want to push more in that direction with others and empower those ideas. And I think in the world that we live in today, everything is so crazy. There's a lot of chaos. There's a lot of things that are just really hard to understand why they're happening. And I think that we need to understand the nature of our reality as a foundation, as a culture, to understand how the world is working. Like, I think we don't have a framework for that anymore. Thousands of years ago, hundreds of years ago, religion kind of played a part with that. Now, because people don't, there's not a very like large base of people who are, there's less and less people who believe in God and like things like this, like created frameworks for people to understand the world. And we understand the world to be much more complicated now. And everything we know about, quantum mechanics and cosmic theory and like all these things, it takes and negates those things, those ideas, and we don't have a framework anymore. So to me, the way that I look at it is, if I can participate in things to start to establish the framework of belief and the way that we can understand the world that we actually operate within dimensionally, then that's the kind of thing I want to do. Philosophically, that's the thing I want to do. Spiritually, that's the thing that I want to do. Because I think that we need that. I need that. Those are the things I want to move forward on. I think that a lot of this stuff during the bear market has been trying to push things to get sales and get drops and all this stuff, which is great. Like, no shade on that at all. I've been a part of a lot of it. I love that aspect of it too. But at this point, I think 2024 is going to be a time of reckoning of ideas. And that's the thing that I want to be a part of more than anything else.
I love that so, so much. And I know that you created something called the Artist Incubator. Can you describe what that is and how people can join?
Yeah, I started it in like February or March or so of this year. And it's just like a space. We have a critique studio, and people post work in there as like works in progress. And we kind of follow like a certain type of like critique and feedback structure. There's over 300 people in there. I'd say maybe like 10 to 20% are fairly active and people come and go. And it's just like a really, there's nothing, I don't know. I feel like it's something that it could go in a lot of different directions. The way that it is right now, we typically have a live feedback type of event every Friday where we spend 2 or 3 hours going through the work that's been posted, or we go through and kind of talk about specific topics or if a new tool came out or whatever. And it's just sort of like an open, an open dialogue, open conversation. And it becomes really interesting when you start to see people like progress over time. And I don't think that Twitter is really the place for art feedback or art critique, because it's not, people don't, people may put something out there as like a work in progress, but most of the feedback that you get is like, cool piece, bro, when mint. And it's not really like, it's not like feedback. Like, you know, as someone who's been like in a lot of creative teams, as well as like going to like art school and stuff like that, like I've been in a lot of critiques and feedback. Like I need that. I want other people to look at something and tell me what they see in it, because you can't see the forest for the trees a lot, especially, you know, from an artist standpoint. You have to have the perspective of others, and it has to be something that's trusted and valuable, and not just thrown at you either. Like it's a very kind of delicate, it's kind of a delicate thing getting feedback from people. And you have to like trust who it is you're getting feedback from. And so, yeah, it's just sort of a close knit kind of group of people. And we just do feedback. That's basically all that it is right now. And we kind of help each other out. And there's a lot of people actually from a lot of different career paths within there, just as there are here on Twitter. Like I think something that ends up happening is we all kind of assume, you know, everyone's just an artist or everyone's a DJ or everyone's this or whatever, but that's not the case. Like people have like 20 years of experience, 30 years of experience in the creative world or the film industry or whatever. And they're bringing that stuff to the table, and that stuff is really valuable. That perspective is really valuable to have from a creative standpoint. And so that's something that I've really enjoyed, is having conversations with people that are from all these different backgrounds and, you know, putting feedback out there. You can join it by going to artists, plural, artists, .blac.ai. And it's just that page, for those who aren't members, that page is just like a little questionnaire thing. I basically use it as like a filter to make sure we don't get like trash in there and stuff. But other than that, it's pretty much open to whoever, especially if you give like genuine answers to things. And I want to make sure, again, it's about trust and value and making sure that the people who are in there want to be in there. And so far we've just had really, really positive growth, in terms of process and ability and people learning from each other. And it's been great. It's super chill. It's nothing like, you know, I think a lot of people have Discords and stuff where, you know, you kind of need to be there all the time. And that's not really what it is. It's much more like a studio space that you show up, you know, once a week and drop some stuff, and we all have a conversation and we go on about our day. That's sort of, it's much more like that than it is anything else. And, you know, it's there's no cost or anything like that. It's just like a space that I run, and I, you know, I pay for myself, and just to kind of have it for people who want to use it. And so that's, yeah, hopefully that gives a little bit of insight.
That's awesome. I really love that. And I was curious, as you've been doing that, if you've come across any artists that you think that collectors should know about, anybody that you feel strongly, you know, like we should check out.
Oh man. Yeah. Everyone in there has progressed like crazy. I'll just, in no particular order, I'll just kind of run off a few people that I have in mind. Neil, AKA, I think Cryptocologist, is at Underworld. Underworld's an incredible artist. He gets suppressed a lot on Twitter because the stuff is pretty raw and kind of, you know, gory on the surface level, but it's absolutely incredible and impressive work that he has derived. A completely unique process with how he utilizes Stable Diffusion, and it's mind-blowing. I think a lot of the minting tech and the experience tech that we have right now, it isn't up to the level of his work, and so I think it's hard to really experience it. You know, a lot of it's like, I don't know, like 20,000 pixels or something. It's insane how much detail that he gets. So I think that he's definitely someone that stands out to me in terms of being able to push things out there. Weird Mom is in there. Jen Quantum Spirit's in there. There's just a whole list of people. Maneki's in there. Delta's in there, which everyone knows, obviously, as well. I'm trying to think, like, off the top of my head, you really put me on the spot. There's just a lot of people in there. It's hard. I don't think it's... To me, it's less about collecting and more about just being able to progress as an artist more than anything else. And we've seen that happen like over this past year, like the amount of people that have come from one thing and they're now at a different level. I'm not going to say that's because of that, but it's definitely fostered that type of creative process, and with feedback and that sort of thing. So, yeah.
Oh, that's an awesome list. I'm definitely going to check out some. There's some names I didn't know there. So I might go back to the recording and make a little snippet out of this one, because I do want to check out some of the people you mentioned. And we do have...
I was just looking through the list here. We got Diego, who's in the crowd, who's also in there. He's incredible. Oh, he's almost like a black and white Dali-esque type of work. Love that. Chris Hackett's in there as well. 6L is in there. I'm just going through the list of people in here so I can... Yeah, they're all in there as well. So definitely check them out. And Love might be too. So Jeff Jag, yeah, it's a good crowd.
Awesome. Yeah, funny, Diego's PFP like really caught my attention, and I just gave him a follow like even before you mentioned him. I was like, man, that looks pretty sick. So, oh, that's so cool. Yeah, thanks for everyone that is in the room. Just resetting here real quick. Would greatly appreciate if everybody that's in here could like and repost the space so we can get more people in this awesome space with an awesome guest. I did want to go to the hands because we do have a few people that are up in the speaker panel as well. I think I saw Eddie come up first. I know your hand went up a few times as well, so I figured you had some stuff to say. How you doing, Eddie? Happy Friday. Nice seeing you, brother.
Hi, Giancarlo, Jennifer, Black. Great to be in the space. I love all the information you was giving to us, Black, and getting to know you a little bit better. I think we have a lot of things that may be in common with our mindsets a little bit. So that's super cool to hear. And I wanted to talk about one of your pieces. And Giancarlo, Jen, can I pin it up to the top when I talk about it a little?
Yeah, go for it, man.
So D-Unite is being featured at Miami right now. This is the way I'm reading this here, and it's live in Miami AR Experience and Muscle Beach Art Walk. But I wanted to read the description is what I wanted to do, really, because it's called D-Unite. We move from within, from a point of one true knowing. Time is just an illusion. Our yeah, you used a $5 word there. Our enigmatic side is growing. Separation, liberation, to unite, to ignite, a force of enlightenment, reckoning, and sight, to come on back around, the cycle will continue, the selfish one, the self one, universal truth, communal. And I was wanting to know where that came from and how you came up with that description.
Thanks, man. I have gotten into, actually said this on a space last week for the Vibism show, which is what this piece is in. Someone asked me the same question. I have gotten into a habit of, you know, when you go to write these descriptions for works, I can write a lot about the work, but you can never write that much about the work. Like foundation of these places is always like limited. And I've gotten into this habit of just sitting down and just free writing a poem. And so that's what I did. That's the truth of it. I sat down and just wrote it. Where it's derived from is really I've been trying to achieve this idea of breaking the piece down in a poetic way rather than like hand feeding it. You know, I don't really want to like hand like, oh, this is an image of a person separating apart from it. So like, I feel like it's really lame. I don't know. I'd rather just put it into some type of format that represents the idea. And maybe that's a little bit, I don't know. I just don't like to do it that way. And so I tend to maybe post, you know, process threads or things like this that talk more about that stuff in a more direct way. But as far as like the actual you know, description itself, I like to kind of represent the idea there. And so the concept behind it is that it's this idea of almost like a karmic cycle of separating from yourself. And we all inherently choose to experience this thing that we're all here to experience, and the choice is there to do that or not. We all have the choice to leave at any time we want, by the way, but we tend to not do that. And so I think that we have this ability to de-unite from our physical self, and we choose not to do that. And so the selfish one of self one is representative of this idea that the sort of the ego ends up taking place in the choice making like process, and we end up, you know, kind of adhering ourselves and snapping into this physical self because of the ego, because of the physical shell. And so the work itself visually definitely speaks to that. Obviously it's more like the silhouette of self stepping out of the like a hollow empty shell of self, and that is the ego that tends to put us back into the cycle over and over and over again. So yeah, hopefully, I'm not sure that answers the question, but that's sort of where my mind was.
Yeah, you nailed the question. I knew you wrote that before. I've read it like five times trying to get those $5 words down. But I read it and I'm like, oh my God, he hand wrote this. Like he came up with this on his own, and it just picks the image perfectly, and I was super excited about it because I write poetry myself. So I was like, this is not ChatGPT. I'm sorry. Anybody that uses ChatGPT, that's perfectly okay with me, but it kind of pisses me off when I'm a poet. Just full disclosure there. Sorry, guys. But anyways, I was reading that and I was like super excited about it. So my hand kept going up because I'm like, I want to know about this poem. I want to know about this poem. And I love everything that you've been saying in this space, like I was saying, and I'm trying to figure out if you can see sounds after 6 shots of espresso.
If I can see sounds, not quite. I don't have anything special on my espresso, but if I did, maybe I could. No, I really appreciate that, man. And also I invite you, just because if you're into that, definitely go check out the collection on Foundation called Hands of the Faithful, just to check it out, because every single one of those pieces, I wrote a poem for each one of those specifically that reflects on each piece. And the Hands of the Faithful series is sort of like it's almost like an introduction into my world of things that I'm building, which we haven't really spoken much about on this space, but each one of those is very specific to the piece and to the person who ends up collecting it. It's a sold out collection at the moment. I am doing like private offers. I just had one the other day, but I'm expanding it out from the original 13 to 21. But on the poetry side, definitely go check that out. Just to read through, I'm not shilling it, but definitely go check it out, because I'm actually really proud of those. And that's where my sort of habit of writing poems for works kind of came from, because they're more like prosy ritual scripture type of prose, you know, in a way, than they are like poems, is sort of how I look at them. They're almost like what you would say at a seance or something. That's sort of how I feel about them. So if you're into that, definitely go check it out, just to kind of throw that out there.
I'll definitely go check that out and read through some of those. That sounds interesting. If you want to hear some spoken word poetry and 15 different languages, you can go check out my Foundation page, because a lot of artists have helped me, because I only know English. So I apologize for only knowing English, but I'm doing the best I can. Jennifer, Giancarlo, you're doing awesome in the space as usual, always on point. And Jennifer, yeah, you nailed the introduction as usual. Guys, and thank you for giving me a mic.
Thank you, Eddie. Always love your energy. Thanks for the question. Thanks for coming up, man. Appreciate you, brother. All right. I know I had next on the list, I had my friend Charlie here. How you doing? Happy Friday.
Man, GM, and how the energy in this space is incredible. I appreciate you guys for having me here. Black, man. This dude is amazing, bro. Like, when I hear this dude talk, this dude is like the, how you call those? Like, they actually handle the cobras, the snake charmer. Like, the way he talks is insane, bro. I'm just calling it. I just want to make this short, because Black got things to do. Giancarlo got things to do in Miami. Jennifer, are you in Miami too?
She is, yeah.
All right, let's get it.
See, we all here.
There's things to be done. I got 2 questions for Black. And I was wondering about this for a long time. I know Black, when it comes down to music, and actually he was able to say that he's a very fan of Tool. So when he was talking about tools and things like that, that came into my mind, like, hey, he actually likes Tool. And I can see his art resemble that type of scheme that he's actually working on. So I was just wondering in my head, is Tool as a band, or what they actually represent, inspire you to the type of work that you are creating? Or is something that probably was kind of an idea and then you actually took off with something else?
Yeah, Tool has been such a huge influence for me over the years. You know, I started listening to Tool when I was in high school, maybe like early high school, late middle school or so. And I've always said, like, when I was in my 20s and I kind of started to explore consciousness and things like this, after I kind of hit a certain level of understanding, I used to say that if I was religious, if I went to church, Tool would be the hymns, you know, that I sung, because a lot of the work that they speak to is very much so the same ideas. It's, you know, 46 and 2 Jungian theories, you know, writing the spiral to the end. Like, these things are truth. Like, they really do resonate with me on a spiritual level. And another thing that's very inspirational about Tool, I'm so glad you brought them up, is I could talk about them forever, Charlie, of course. One thing about them that I really like is, I think my art kind of, not just visually, like, kind of reference them, but from a intricacy level, where like people who don't know Tool or the philosophy behind a lot of the music that they have, if they listen to it for the first time, they hear the surface level. But what they hear is they know there's something else there. Like if you've never listened to Tool and you listen to anything from Lateralis or Anima or 10,000 Days, like you can listen to any single track and you know there's something else below the surface, even if you don't know. If you don't know what's there, you know there's something else there because it feels that way. And you know, when you start to really study what they have, I mean, Tool has built entire albums off of the Fibonacci sequence. They have these crazy polyrhythmic structures and everything is built off of like sacred geometry. And even like the word structures are done in like reverse Fibonacci sequences, and the track lists are done in these different types of like golden spiral techniques. And so it's crazy when you really dive into the structure and process of how they've built their music. But if you don't know that stuff, then you don't know it, but you can feel it. And I believe in like energy transference. Like I believe that putting that into the music, even if someone's not a drummer and they can't sit down and count out the polyrhythms, like they know, you can hear the complexity and what's there, even if you don't know what's there. And I tend to kind of look at my work in a similar way, where I put a lot into what's in the work. I put a lot into it. And I know, especially in our Twitter scroll verse where no one looks at anything for more than 4 seconds, I know that people do not know all those things. I don't expect it, but what I want is energy transference. Like I want someone to look at the work and go like, holy shit, like I don't know what that is, but I know it. I know that hits me on some level. Like I want to call out consciousness. I want to call that out of people. I want to bring it out. I want to break that pattern of the kind of the obvious. I want to break that. And even if someone doesn't read through all the threads and really absorb all the stuff or hear me speak about it or whatever, and they just see it for the first time, like I want, my goal is to stop the scroll. I want someone to look at it and go like, holy shit, that I like that hits me. And that's what I want. And I look at Tool's music as a very similar type of pattern. So yeah.
No, and this is something that you brought up. It's very important. I often hear in Web3 this word, resonate. I resonate. It's all about resonance, right? It's all about frequency and how you actually feel about the actual art that you see. So when I saw your work for the first time and consequently till today, it's just like one, it's like the same. It's like do not deviate for anything else. It's funny to me because sometimes you say like, oh, it's all over the place. Sometimes it doesn't, it's not as cohesive, but it's all cohesive to me. It just makes sense because it comes from you and what you represent and what you're actually striving for. So with that being said, I definitely want to ask you this last question before I actually leave the floor for everyone else to actually ask these questions towards you. When it comes down to tools that you use to create your art, how long does it take you to actually create an identity of something that you really want to do and you want to stick to it, or that's something that you don't want to follow and you want to create chaos and create whatever you feel like? Because I feel like you have an identity or some type of style that actually I resonate with, or I can actually call you a miles away and I know that's you without even seeing your name. So I just want to see if that's something that it took you a while to come up with the style, or that's something that you're not aiming for?
So I think traditionally, so I'm going to answer this from sort of a sidebar and then I'm going to come right back into it. Okay. So follow me. I think traditionally artists tend to try and stick with a visual aesthetic or a visual style. Maybe that evolves over time from like a linear standpoint, but they become known for that visual aesthetic over time. And to me, like with the tools that we have available to us, especially utilizing AI and that sort of thing, I find that to be limiting. I don't want to, even when I first started out, I did not want to be locked into a single thing. I think we're at a time of exploration and being able to create a lot of different things. And so what I've tried to do is I've really tried to create a core philosophy rather than a core visual aesthetic. And I think that when I look at my work and my different collections and things, like I see them as being like visually different, but conceptually the same. philosophically the same. They fit in that spectrum of things. And so that has taken really, I would say, the length of this whole year. You know, what you said, Charlie, that you kind of see my work kind of all fitting in within the same feeling and that sort of thing. You know, that's something that's been hard for me to accept. And so like earlier in the year, I had a collector say the same thing to me. And that really made me kind of pushed me into a place of like creating a framework for my work, like creating this spectrum of things, this like belief system around my work. And that way I could branch out into different visual aesthetics while still tapping into the same ideas, into the same philosophies. And so like the way that I look at it is different types of like different points on that spectrum of concept and philosophy dictate different styles of work. You know, the more like transcendence and, you know, like astral travel and like things like this, like I look at that as like the penumbra work or like string theory, which you collected, you know, a week or so ago. Like though that type of visual aesthetic to me is like that, like kind of existential surrealism, and it's colorful and it's bright and it's really trippy and like everything on it looks really weird if you really look at it for a minute and you kind of like on the surface level take it as one thing, but you spend time with it and you're like, holy shit, I don't really know what it is I'm really looking at. And then you kind of come back around again. And that to me is that. And then the more like psychedelic type of like mind bending ultra consciousness, like that's like a portraiture, high end, like visual surrealistic type of stuff. And like the darker stuff, I tend to go more and more photorealism. I'm not really sure why that is, but I go a little bit more photorealism. It's like Hands of the Faithful is like a painterly realism type of style. And it's red and blue and dark and kind of macabre in a way. And then like the really dark, like occult stuff is like post photography, black and white photorealism. You can't really tell that it has anything to do with AI at all. It's like highly composited. And, you know, I edit all of it, like, for, you know, from my years of like photography experiences and stuff. And I edit all that stuff. And so there's like this whole spectrum of like visual aesthetic, but it's all touching on the same type of philosophies. And so that's the goal that I've had this year. And you telling me that hopefully I've achieved it, but that's what it is. I want to continue to work towards is really adhering to this like philosophical core belief system around the work. And in that way, when you look at something, you're not like, oh, that looks like black. You look at it and go, that feels like black. That's what I want, you know?
Facts. Okay, so you got a structure, and that's very important for an artist, because an artist that it doesn't have a structure or a foundation, they're going to be all over the place trying to experiment and trying to discover things, which is not a bad thing. But I like the fact that you are branching out from things that you already created and actually come up with more things that actually want to make people feel that that's you rather than just the visual aspect of it as well. So that resonance, that frequency that we were being talking about. I know Giancarlo and Jennifer are going to kill me for this, but I got one more, man. I want one more question, man. When it comes down to the work that you create, I was always wondering one thing and one thing only. What's going on with the walls? Have you been noticing that some of the pieces that you create, Penumbra, and all these other works that you actually, string theory for that matter as well, they have walls and a lot of walls for that is. So I just wanted to know if there's a meaning behind it, there's something that correlates with that narrative of the walls. In there on those artworks.
Yeah. So a lot of the walls come from the process driven, like the steps that I go about creating the penumbra work. What I would say the human string theory is sort of in the penumbra style of things. I just kind of call it the penumbra style, but you see a lot of walls in those, and it's part of the process where like a lot of the blend ingredients, if you will, that I utilize to build it out have structures in them. So the way that I just quick, I'll try to be as succinct about this as possible. The way that I work on my penumbra style of things is that I created a set of like blend ingredients, if you will, earlier in the year based on photography of mine, oil painting textures of mine, like these things. And I created like two or three core blend ingredients. And then I will go into Midjourney and I'll create scenes. So like with penumbra, like I know I have a full narrative. I know what everything's going to be. It's like, okay, there's going to be a figure. They're going to be standing, going through this alleyway, through like this dimensional structure. And they're standing on this thing with this stuff or whatever. And I basically kind of create a structure of a scene. And then I blend that with my blend ingredients that I've created over time, depending on what the scene looks like and the colors and that sort of thing. I choose a different ingredient. And then I end up creating like 50 to 100 variations of that one thing, and then I composite all of them together. So for example, like pen number two, which is pen at the top, the more like blue one where they're in the room kind of looking forward to a doorway, that one was like a 50-hour compositing piece that had just with all these different walls and the ceiling and that sort of thing. Philosophically, I think it hits on this idea that we're sort of bound by this physical realm, and we have these walls around us dimensionally where we believe that there's nothing on the other side. So with string theory, kind of referencing that one for a moment, on the other side of the wall is an observer. And I'm not sure if you noticed, Charlie, but you should go check it out. If you go and zoom in into the observer's hand, they're holding the string. And so the observer is what creates and manifests reality. That's what takes probabilistic nature of quantum mechanics into a real nature. That's what snaps matter into place from probability. And so it's a matter of like the observer being behind the wall, be on the other side of the veil, dictating how we consciously believe that we have free will when that is actually an illusion because of the observer that's there, that's snapped everything into place. So the wall acts as a structural barrier from what's represented as like the way that we see the world itself. So it's derived from a process, but it does fit within like the kind of philosophy of work. I hope that answers the question.
Oh, hell yeah. Now that I look at the work, it makes even more sense now when it comes down to string theory and what it was about. I mean, the wall.
Read the poem. Read the poem in the very last line. No, it references that.
When you explain it, Black, it's like, damn, like now it makes sense. Like a whole lot of sense. Like, yeah. I'm actually glad that I actually asked that question before I actually leave the mic. I appreciate you, Giancarlo. And Jennifer, let's get it.
We appreciate you too, Charlie, man. No, you always have some great questions, man. And, you know, I loved hearing that, even that last one, you know, and the answer, because it's, you know, the more I learn about Black's work, you know, it's like the greater the appreciation and the depth and the, you know, just the understanding and the meaning behind it, you know. And and it's funny you mentioned even that question about Tool, because I'm also like a huge fan of Tool, and you know, and even like A Perfect Circle, and so I love the music. And then, you know, when you mentioned that, you're talking about, I'm like, oh shit, yeah, now I see like connections. And I was thinking then about like the Lateralis artwork, and I'm like, yes, I see like parallels there. And you know, so now I actually want to go and like listen to some of the music as well. But yeah, no, man, always great questions, Charlie. Appreciate you, man. Thanks for coming up.
Giancarlo, Tool is the reason why I raised my hand. Damn it.
Oh, it is.
Charlie mentioned a piece that he did a while back for Tupac. I've got the theater mask tattooed on my right arm. Then he comes in and asks Black about Tool, and I got the Tool eyeball on my left arm.
No way. You did? Yeah,
on the inside of my left arm. I asked Bat Soup Yum about music the other day, and he said he liked Tool. I'm like, oh, thank God I'm not the only one that just knows exactly how awesome Tool is. And if you've never listened to Tool, ladies and gentlemen, youngsters in the crowd, please go listen to The Pot by Tool all the way through and enjoy the experience. That's all I wanted to say.
Love it. All right, so we're going to do one more speaker for now, and then we were going to jump back to some other questions we had prepared. I had next on the list, Digital Koi. How you doing? Happy Friday.
Hello. I'm on my way to Art Miami. Black, it was great to hang out with you yesterday and have dinner. I just wanted to come up to first just say, you know, Black is one of my favorite artists in the space, a friend, and I really look forward to what's coming and what you're doing. My question is, I don't think many people know that you have a much more traditional art background prior to getting into more digital contemporary art, if you will. And I was wondering, you know, to what extent, you know, do you have plans to share that work from your past as part of your story, one, and then two, to what extent do you see yourself almost doing more of that type of work again in the future?
Yeah, man, it was awesome hanging out with you as well. I'm sure we'll chill tonight too. I don't know. I think I tend to compartmentalize things a lot, and I think like what's in the past is in the past, even though it kind of brought, you know, it brought a lot of skill sets, I think, and perspective to stuff. But You know, it's funny you should ask that because even yesterday, Delta and I were walking around, I think Art Miami, actually, where you're on the way to going right now. And there was a piece that we saw and I was like, man, this reminds me of a painting that I did like years ago. And Delta asked if I had, like, did I have it? And I was like, I don't know. You know, I started going through my phone and going through old emails I'd sent from like, I think it's like from 2009 or 2010 or something. I finally found it. And I brought it up and I showed him and he was like, holy shit, like that's great. You know, and I was like, and I looked at it and I was like, man, like this is actually, you know, it was like huge canvas I had hand built and it just, it resembled a lot, I think like philosophically the same ideas that I have now. And it's really weird because I hadn't thought about that painting in a really long time. Like it's at my parents' house in Virginia. Like it's sort of somewhere stacked in a room somewhere, you know, I haven't seen it in forever. And it's just interesting to kind of like, it's like in some ways you kind of look at work you're doing currently. I think any artist can say this, maybe, you know, at least I'm speaking for myself, but I think the work you're working on currently, you feel like, oh, this is the new me. This is the thing I'm doing now. This is what I want to do now. But it's really all derived from other things, you know, and like looking back on like that piece yesterday really kind of hit me in a way where I was like, damn, like this was stuff I was really trying to push this then, although I didn't really understand it as much as I do now. Like I didn't understand what my goal was or what my purpose was behind it. I definitely couldn't like articulate it, at least like in a mental way, but I knew that I felt it. And I think a lot of it was more feelings based. And so I don't know, like maybe that's something that I share. Maybe it's something that I put out there. I think especially walking around here in the last few days, as well as other experiences that I've had this year in a physical sense at different events and stuff, I think physical work is really important. I think it's important to experience it, to absorb it. I think it's important to work with like traditional galleries. Like I know we sort of had a bit of this conversation last night, Koi, about sort of working with the more like traditional curators and things like this, where like our space is one thing and it's valuable, but there's just so many people who can experience the work outside of this space. And it, fortunately/unfortunately, I think a lot of that has to be done physically. Like whether that's a good or bad thing, I don't know, but I think that has to be done physically. So I do see some potential, albeit, you know, further down the line, to maybe merge some of the things that I'm doing back into a physical sense, or kind of touch on some paintings or things like this. Like I see that as being a potential. I don't have a plan for that, but I'm open-minded to it. And I'm constantly reminded. I think walking around here, looking at work in person and going through all the galleries, I'm just constantly reminded of how powerful physical work can be. And a part of me doesn't want to, you know, miss out on a chance to make an impact like that.
That's awesome, man. That's great to hear. No, I feel you there, just because, you know, and part of why I ask that is because I think that, you know, what's interesting in the space is that sometimes people think that if you use AI or other technology, that you aren't really an artist, in quotes. And so I think there's a degree to which, at least for me, I've been thinking about this more, just showing your history and body of work as sort of part of your story, I think can help to contextualize the art that we're creating today. And it's kind of like, you know, I'm a musician too. It's kind of like when you think of music, you look at a lot of people who are classically trained musicians, where they gravitate to eventually is jazz. And I kind of look like what we're doing now is kind of like jazz, because you're like throwing everything together, creating things that maybe no one's ever seen before, or like in the case of jazz, heard before. And so, but using that classically trained background to influence that. And so I think that's, you know, that's part of what I'm thinking, you know, our conversation last night, you were talking about this, how people are like, oh, you're not an artist if you're doing this. It's like, no, like, you know, we've been using traditional tools for years before we started doing this stuff, right? And so I think showing people that is part of the story. It may not be what you sell now. It may not be what you show now, per se. But making it part of your story, I think, is something that, at least to me, is going to be important for 2024. All right, I got to jump down because I'm at Art Miami now trying to find out where this thing is. But love you, man. You're killing it. And look forward to seeing you later today. All right, later.
Absolutely. Thanks, man.
Yeah, thanks for coming up, man. Enjoy the rest of your time in Miami. And we were going to go to next to back to Jenny on some questions. Payment, I did see your hand up. Did you have a...
Yes, sir. Something that I wanted to add to this conversation was this issue that You know, I mean, about this issue that I talking about Renaissance artists and form, was it issue that as an NFT artist can be useful for us that were used in this tools, you know what I'm saying? And it can be too much useful, and for me, actually, good artists and really artists is who's that is successful at any genre. You know what I'm saying, bro? And I wanna know your comment about it. And I wish a nice weekend for you, Mr. Giancarlo, Jennifer, and Mr. Black. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate you.
Yeah, I just sort of absorb it. Just waiting. We're going to jump over to other questions. So
I'll go to Jenny next.
Okay, awesome. I did have a question, and it has to do with advice. What advice do you have for artists newer to the Web3 and art world in general?
I think that this space can like eat you up and spit you out, you know, and I think that it's something that, you know, what happens here in a day traditionally happens like in a week or a month outside of this space, and things feel like they move so fast, and you feel like you have to be here 24/7. You got to be on Twitter. You got to be doing this thing. I'm like, even just walking around here the last couple of days, like I haven't been on my phone. Like I can't do it because I'm being present. Like I'm being present, and I want to be accessible, but I also want to be present. And sometimes there's a balance there. And I think like just spiritually, I know that I've sacrificed part of myself spiritually being in this space because I've not been a huge fan of social media for a long time. Before opening up this Twitter account, I didn't even have a social media account. I stopped using Facebook, I think, in like, you know, 2014 or something. Like, I'm not a big fan of it for a lot of reasons. While I do recognize the necessity of it, and I do see value of this space because we all have community and we're close and you get to know people, I think that's good. You know, there are positives to it, but I think it can eat you up. You know, I've hit burnout several times, and I think at the end of the day, art is the reason you're here. Like that is the thing. If you're able to do the other stuff and keep up with the work, and still produce things that resonate with you, that seem valuable, that hit on a level of what you're trying to intend with the way that you're expressing things and the way that you're working, then great. But if it's not, if it's starting to eat at you, if it's starting to wear you out, take a break. It's fine. Like I think that that's something that. And you hear people say that, but then you also hear a lot of people say, oh, you can't walk away, you can't stop, or but you have to, like spiritually, mentally, anxiety, emotional reasons, like you have to be able to be yourself. Like you have to be healthy, whether that's physically or mentally or emotionally or anything, you have to be, because if you're not, even like regardless of, you know, obviously there's like the actual health aspects of it, but if you're not, you're not going to be able to produce the work you want to produce, or at least in the best way that you can produce it. And then you're doing yourself a disservice at the end of the day. Like I'm speaking that from experience. Like I am a bit of a workaholic. I can work all the time. I'd rather be doing something than nothing. That's just how I am. I've always been that way. And I can take on a lot, but at the same time, it wears me out. And I think recognizing that, and not feeling like this isn't a zero sum game. If someone makes a sale for one ETH, that doesn't mean that they made it and you didn't. You know, I think that's important to recognize as well. Like it's not a zero sum game. Like everyone's on their own path and everyone's growing in their own way. Some slower, some faster, some bigger, some smaller. That's the nature of everything. That's the nature of life. It's the nature of the universe. It's the nature of any ecosystem. It's always going to be that way. Embrace the thing that you do. Own your process, create what you want to create, connect with the people that resonate with the work that you're creating and the work that you resonate with, and support people who are supporting you. That's the advice, I think. And you have to, you got to be right with yourself more than anything else. You have to be right with yourself. And if you're not, the work will suffer and your journey will too. So I'm not sure if that gives perspective, but that's sort of my advice in a nutshell.
Man, I love that advice so much. Also, as somebody that's, in a way similar to you, like, you know, always doing stuff, I always prefer to be busy doing a lot of stuff. And it can be very easy when you're like that kind of personality with that drive to like you know, run yourself to the ground, you know, and I think you hit on like so many important things, like, you know, in terms of that rest being like important for you to even be able to produce your best work, right? Because when you're like, you know, burning out, you know, you're just not going to be able to do the best stuff. And I think even just for the longevity, right? If you want to be in the game for the long run, like, you know, you got to be able to, it's almost like pace yourself and take care of yourself and stuff like that. So no, I think that's so good. And that point you made about like it not being a zero sum game, I think is also like tremendously important. I think people do get stuck a lot in that like scarcity mindset, that like if you win or somebody else wins, I lose kind of thing. And honestly, like there's enough here for everyone, right? So I love that you hit on those points.
And just to add to that last one, like, I think that everyone's art is different. And so like you can't compare what you're doing with someone else. You have to be able to look at someone else's, like, so if you're looking at someone who's had a big success or they're doing whatever, like that just like you, like something that I find, maybe I'm a rare breed in the way that I look at it, but like, I don't look at that as being envious. I don't look at that as like they won, I lost. I look at that as a proof of use case. That's a proof case of like, they did this. They succeeded in that. Therefore, that is possible. That's not going to be my exact path, but I know that that's possible now. So therefore, it breaks open my mind in a way that I see better possibilities. I see where things can go. I'm very observant. I'm strategic. But I look at the way that other people win as proof positive that it can be done, not that I lost. And so I think that you see that all the time, like, especially in group chats, like you see someone make like a huge sale or do whatever, a huge drop, whatever, and other people like, man, like, you know, I wish that person had come over here and bought my stuff. Or I do it. But it's like that type of mentality is like, we create our reality. Mm-hmm. Like that's, we create it. So if you separate yourself from the win, if you separate yourself from the success and you say they won, I didn't, then you will not win, because that's not the thing that you're attracting anymore. That's not the reality you're manifesting. And it's not woo-woo stuff. It's like quite literally the vibration you put out into the world is one. And the way that it's then a perspective, it's then a filter in which you look upon the world. If you're negative and you're hateful or jealous or envious or any of these other things, that's the kind of thing that will be coming to you. That's the kind of thing you'll look for. Like, we all have a choice in the way that we perceive external things. You can either take something as a good thing or you can take it as a bad thing. And like, that's your choice, is to do that. You know, like we all have that moment of choice. And once you choose that, that's how it is from then on, because we're all very, like, you know, ego driven people, in the sense that we have our own mindset, we have our own philosophy and perspective. And then we start setting in stone that perspective. So if you start on that path, that is a path of self-destruction, not one of success later. And so like that's the thing you got to be aware. And it's hard. I'm not saying it's easy to do that. It's very difficult. Like, of course, everyone wants to win, like that. Of course, that's why we're here, that you want to do that. But you have to, you got to like train yourself. Like, you got to train it to look at someone else's positive as a proof of positive for everyone, and not just like a proof of you not winning or whatever. You know, that's like the training mechanism you have to have in place.
Yeah, no, 100%, man. I love that. And yeah, that's that whole notion, you know, the perspective. Yeah, it's huge. And you know, we attract what we put out, right? And you get what you kind of like look for, right? So yeah, if you're looking for the negativity and stuff like that, it's what's going to come to you, right? So and Black, one other thing I wanted to ask you as well was, and I know you touched on a few things, but if you could tell us about, you know, any other upcoming projects, goals you have for your art career, other stuff that we can expect to see from you in the future.
Yeah, so right now I've got Vibism that's out with it's within the show. Vibism is the piece to unite that they were speaking about a while ago. That's out today, and then I'm working on a new Penumbra piece here the next few weeks. But overall, I've really deep dive into, I've been writing something that I'm calling the Testaments of Syncretica. It's sort of like a new belief system, philosophy type of thing. And that's been like, that's a massive project. Which I'm, you know, had to go in the rabbit hole at the moment, but that's a massive project and something that I'm working on. I have the Age of Syncretica, which is a 6-piece series that's out, super rare right now. I'll be doing some more work within that world of things. And yeah, just building stuff out. The Hands of the Faithful was a collection that I sold out in September, but I've recently kind of opened it up from 13 to 21, as I mentioned earlier. And I'm kind of, you know, taking like private offers for that. But that's more of like a collective collection type of thing where people can kind of come in and be a part of that as almost like a group of a belief system sort of a thing. So that's there. And I just had a collector reach out to me, I think yesterday, the day before yesterday, for another piece. So I'll have another one of those coming out. And so yeah, I have several projects that are out there that are open-ended at the moment. 2024 is going to be, you know, 2023 was sort of a launching of ideas and a launching of projects. And 2024, I think for me, is going to be bringing a lot of those to full fruition and seeing them through, as well as tapping into some more like traditional avenues of things. So I've got a lot of things out there and a lot of kind of open-ended things that have happened here in the last 6, 8, 9 months. And I'm just trying to kind of not like wrap it up, but I'm trying to just like see those through, focusing more on those and like group drops and things like that in the coming year, and be able to really like tighten things up and like see through the projects that I've started. So those are my plans.
Man, that's awesome. And kind of very intrigued to see about this, the new belief system, when you said it's going to be like a massive project. So very intrigued to see, what comes out of that for next year. All right. So one thing we do also ask all of our guests, being very big movie fans, is what are your top 3 favorite movies of all time? You have to choose 3.
Oh, man. You know, I heard someone ask someone that question in a space last week, and I thought the mic was going to come to me, and I was freaking out. I was like, I don't know how the hell I can trim this down. And later on, I was thinking about it just in case I was asked later, and I still couldn't come up with a list. So you asked me that question, I'm like, shit. I top 3, it's so difficult. I'm a huge horror buff. Like my wife and I love horror movies. I think horror tends to be not just a scary aspect, but I tend to think that horror is almost like the last bastion of creative films at the moment. Everything's still like regurgitated and rebooted, and it's all just like the same thing over and over again. But horror seems to be really good. And I think one of the craziest ones I've ever seen is Hereditary. I think that movie is just absolutely bonkers, and probably, I hate to say it's on the top 3, but it's definitely one of the top 3 movies that have affected me. I love The Shining. I love a lot of Kubrick's work. Interstellar is a fantastic film. Anything by Nolan, really. Guilty pleasure would be Dark Knight, like Heath Ledger. I don't know how much, you know, you can get any better than that. That's some, I think, more obscure, maybe Pi. If anyone's ever seen Pi, that's a fantastic movie. Those are a few to kind of riff off of, but yeah.
Yeah, man, you're speaking my language. I'm a big fan of Kubrick as well. Like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, The Shining. I mean, those are all fantastic movies. Even Space Odyssey. Like Christopher Nolan is probably my favorite director, like, of all time. I mean, he's just, you know, his movies are just like phenomenal. So I'm right there with you. I'm guessing you probably also seen Memento as well. I just also love like the storytelling of that, with like the reverse storytelling. And
amazing. I remember watching that in college, like over and over. I had it on DVD. I used to watch it in the old PlayStation, you know, like on DVD, and watching it over and over and over again. Yeah, Memento is trippy.
Yeah, it is kind of cool to like watch it multiple times, and like then kind of knowing where it's going, and then, you know, kind of like piecing it back and like, oh wow, you know, it's like a totally different experience, like watching it again.
It's funny you should mention that, because like I actually, you know, the Penumbra series, I've had that thought before about Memento, because I started that with the third piece. Like the first piece, Minted, I started with number 3. And I did like 3, 4, and 5. And then I went back and did 1 and 2. And I think about that. I think about Memento, and I also think about Lost. I loved Lost when it was out. Watched it like 100 times. But I love the idea of storytelling from different points of time. My Aegis Syncretica series on Super Rare with Strange History, that one is like 3 different books, and like each, and I've done 2 releases of 3 pieces each. And so like the, like piece 1 is in like book 1, number 1, and then piece 2 is like in book 2, number 1, and piece 3 is in book 3, number 1. And then the second set is number 2 in each one of those. And so it's like telling a story from, sometimes, you know, one from like 1 and 2, it's like 60 years apart. From 2 and 3, it's like 30 years apart. And from the third one is like 1,000 years of history. So like, it goes way off into the future. But so I like the idea of storytelling from different points of reference, such as like loss and memento, and kind of like going backwards or going forwards and telling things at the same time. Like, you know, in Lost, they would show what's happening on the island, but then they would show what was happening 30 years ago, but then they would show what was happening 3 years next after that, all at the same time in the same episode. And I love that kind of breakdown, because you get this like really interesting like linear context and these reveals of things, like why someone's doing something now because of this thing that happened to them then. And, you know, it's just a really interesting way to do storytelling on it. And I definitely take a lot of inspiration from that.
Yeah, it's awesome you mentioned that. I actually also absolutely love that when they do that. And when you see shows like almost sometimes being able to, in the same episode, like go across like three different timelines, and they're somehow like, and it's just amazing when like there's a connection between the stories and in a relationship, and you're just like, how, you know, it's just amazing. Like it's so cool to see that. So and remind me, so what's the collection that resembles that storytelling in different times? I wanted to make sure I took a note of it.
It's the Aegis Syncretica. It's if anyone goes to my bio and just the super rare link that I have there, it's the only work that I have on super rare right now. But it's Aegis Syncretica. Yeah.
So cool. And then I did have a question outside of art and movie watching. What do you enjoy doing?
I love backpacking. I live outside of Seattle. Lived in downtown Seattle for a while, but I live outside of Seattle now, and I try to do as much backpacking as possible. I didn't get to as much this season because of, you know, I had like different gallery things and different things going on, and I feel like I sacrificed a little bit of just spending time in nature as much as I typically do. So I'm a little bit kind of, you know, disappointed in that for this season, but next year I'm definitely going to be getting out more, hopefully. But I love backpacking and just spending like, you know, 4, 5, 6 days out in the backcountry and just like completely like sinking with nature and getting grounded. I love that. Also love to cook. My wife and I are pretty big like chefs, so to speak. We cook pretty much everything, you know, from scratch, and we're vegan, and we like everything's really like, you know, this derivative cooking process of everything. You know, it's like really long. We were talking about this a little bit last night. But I love doing that. So like cooking and backpacking and art. That's pretty much my life in a nutshell, if I were to break it down into three things. So yeah.
Love that. I love the cooking part too. That's super fun.
Yeah, it's I think like, you know, a lot of times we don't like spend enough time with food. You know, it's the culture in a way kind of tends to want us to get things fast and disconnected from where your food comes from. And I think it's important to like know where it comes from, to like know what you're putting into your body. After years of putting shit into my body, I think it's good to, you know, clean house a little bit and know what you're doing. So
yeah. No, that's awesome. Is there like a go-to dish or something that you really enjoy or love making?
Yeah, actually, I was telling a couple of people this last night because we got on this same conversation, so I'm being repetitive, but we make this from scratch smoked tempeh and jalapeno mac and cheese like every Sunday. It's like our Sunday ritual, and we make it from scratch, make like cashew cheese from scratch. All vegan, and that dish is like just insane. It's so good. It's like one of the best. We've like perfected it over, you know, a year or two, maybe even longer than that, of making it almost every single week, and the thing is like just absolutely banging. It's so good.
Dude, that sounds amazing. Like now I'm hungry. I want to go get some food. That sounds so good. Well, I do want us to like kind of bring the space down to a close now, because, you know, obviously, as Charlie mentioned a little bit earlier, you know, we got stuff to do, things to see here in Miami, enjoying the time. Man, it has been such a pleasure having you on the space, you know, just learning more about you, your artwork, your process, your philosophy. Love that, you know, whole message about, you know, having a core philosophy versus a core, you know, core visual. Yeah, man, it's just been just an enriching experience, and even just giving me a greater appreciation of the artwork and like all that you like put into your process and everything. So it's been really, really cool having you on. I really hope that we also get a chance to connect maybe tomorrow, meet up here in Miami. And I do want to give also a big thanks to everybody that joined the space, and those that also came up to speak, man, greatly appreciate having you all here as well.
All right. Well, Black, thank you so much, man.
Yeah. Thank you guys for having me here. And it's been a great conversation. I know I've been looking forward to this for the last like month or so since we scheduled it. And I know we're both like in the middle of craziness in Miami, but hopefully it was a bit of, I've actually enjoyed kind of chilling for a few minutes and just hanging out and, you know, taking a breath from the last few days of craziness. But yeah, it's been an amazing conversation. Thank you both so much for having me here.
Thank you. It was such a pleasure getting to know you more. Hope we bump into each other very soon.
Yeah, I hope so too. We'll definitely play tag over Twitter and see where we're at. And yeah, there's just so much stuff going on. Hopefully we'll cross paths.
Yeah, let's plan on it, man. Let's plan on it. Well, thank you again, Black. Appreciate it. And yeah, man, hope you enjoy the rest of the time here. And again, happy Friday to everyone that's in the room. Take care. Have a wonderful weekend. Bye.